Welcome to another week of our verse-by-verse, four-and-a-half-year journey through all of God's inspired Word. I invite you today to join me first in 1 Samuel chapter 27. But I want to give you a heads up that we're going to kind of bounce around to some different places in this chapter, the following chapter, and over in 1 Chronicles as well. Because there's going to be a whole bunch of stuff happening at the same time, but at different places in the land of promise. And this is difficult to write down historically in a sequential order. So we're going to do our best to kind of cut away and back and forth so that we can develop how everything is playing out at the same time. The larger chronology is this. The 20th year of King Saul, I believe, started in the fall of 1018 BC. David, at that time, was living in the territory of the Philistine city of Gath. He was living down south of there in a place called Ziklag. Been there for almost a year and a half because he'd come to the conclusion the only way to stay out of King Saul's way was to go into the Philistine territory. Saul is on his last year. He will die before his 21st year can start. It just so happens that this final year of Saul is also, by my calculations, a sabbatical year. And the reason why I think that's important is that it would have contributed to the decision of the Philistines to invade in massive force the Israeli breadbasket that we also know as the Valley of Jezreel or the Plain of Megiddo up in the north. And the reason why that would be so important is this. In the sabbatical year, the Israelis don't plant or work or harvest their crops. They just let things grow on their own, and then they use it as needed. And then once the sabbatical year is over in the fall, they go out and work the land and plant the next year's crops and get ready to start the cycle all over again. So from a Philistine viewpoint, this would be the perfect time to disrupt the Israeli agricultural cycle. Go in and steal whatever supplies they currently have that they're living off of, because they'll be coming to an end anyway, and kind of disrupt their plans to get ready to replant the next cycle's crops. The Philistines are also aware that with David in exile and gaining more and more followers that have defected from Saul, that there is, in effect, a civil war kind of brewing amongst the Israelis. And so that kind of makes them weak as well. So I believe that the Philistine lords, there's five of them that rule over the five city-states, I believe they saw this the perfect opportunity to take over Israel for themselves. Keep the Israelis as slaves, as subservient, but to assert themselves as the lords of the entire eastern end of the Mediterranean Sea. So that's why I think 1 Samuel 28 begins with this information. In those days, the Philistines gathered their forces for war to fight against Israel. So they have made a determination to invade Israel for their own benefit. Now, their plan seems to be to gather all their united forces from the five city-states and push northward along the coastal region to a place called Aphek. I'll explain why I believe that in just a moment. That's about 10, maybe 20 miles north of the typical boundary line for the Philistine territories. And from there, travel another day or so up to the plain of Megiddo, which is also associated with the Valley of Jezreel. This is on the northeast side of the mountain ridge that we call Mount Carmel. So more than likely, the Philistines are going to go up and go through a pass that brings them out near the ancient city of Megiddo. And from there, they'll go a little bit eastward and end up near the Hill of Moreh at a place called Shunem, which is north of the city of Jezreel, which is where we'll find the Israelis establishing their base camp. And I believe this is all because the Philistines are trying to completely take over this breadbasket of the north that is between the hill country of Manasseh on the south and all of the Galilean hills on the north of the Valley of Jezreel and the Megiddo Plain. All right, so let me now take you to 1 Samuel 29, where it gives a little bit more detail about this. Now, the Philistines had gathered all their forces at Aphek. So that's the reason why I have you looking at Aphek as a gathering point. It seems to be the perfect place for them to muster together their five different city-state armies and then go northward in mass. Now, the Israelis were encamped by the spring that is in Jezreel. That's where the Philistines will eventually be, is up in the north. They might actually already have an advance group that's up in place, and that's why the Israelis are going to Jezreel to respond to the attempted invasion of their breadbasket. Now, the next thing that we're told in the 1 Samuel 29 passage is this. As the lords of the Philistines were passing on by hundreds and by thousands. So they're all marching together in their great big armies here at Aphek. It says that the David and his men were passing on in the rear with Achish. So David and his guys, about 600 is the number we keep hearing, they're with the army of Gath, which is at the back of the column of movement. That makes me think that Achish, the king of Gath, is probably the junior member of the five Philistine lords. So these guys are marching in the back. Verse 3, the commanders of the Philistines said, "What are these Hebrews doing here?" And Achish said to the commanders of the Philistines, "Is this not David, the servant of Saul, king of Israel, who's been with me now for days and years? Since he deserted to me, I found no fault in him to this day." So Achish's response is, "Well, he's with me. He's been with me for over a year now, and I've never had a problem with him." Verse 4, but the commanders of the Philistines were angry with him, that is, angry with Achish. And the commanders of the Philistines said to him, "Send the man back, that he may return to the place to which you have assigned him." Now that's a reference to Ziklag. Remember, quite a few miles south of Gath, where David has been living with his men and carrying out military operations. He shall not go down with us to battle, lest in the battle he become an adversary to us. For how could this fellow reconcile himself to his lord? Would it not be the heads of these men here? Now that these men here that he's referring to are the five lords of the Philistines. So their thinking is, what better way for David to get back on good terms with Saul than to turn on us during this upcoming battle and kill us and take off our heads, just like he took off Goliath's head, and present our heads to King Saul as trophies of war? That would certainly get him back in to the good graces of his king. And then they say this, is not this David of whom they sing to one another in dances? Saul has struck down his thousands and David his tens of thousands. So that's, remember, the song that was sung at the very beginning of David's military career after he'd killed Goliath and started that battle in the Valley of Elah that killed off a whole bunch of people from the Philistine cities. So in the Philistine lord's minds, David is too dangerous to trust, that they would rather he go away at this point. In fact, not rather, they insist that David be dismissed. Now, this is interesting. Keep your place there in 1 Samuel 29. We'll be right back. This is interesting because there is a brief mention in 1 Chronicles chapter 12, verse number 19, that some of the men of Manasseh deserted to David when he came with the Philistines for the battle against Saul, and yet he did not help them, for the rulers of the Philistines took counsel and sent him away, saying, at peril to our heads, he will desert to his master Saul. So you've got that information there about they sent him away because they didn't trust him. They thought that he would chop off their heads and give them to Saul. But notice that where they're at Aphek, that's in the edge of Manassite territory. And when some of the people from Manasseh, the fighting men, aged men in Manasseh, heard that David was passing through near them in the company of the Philistines, they also defected to David and offered their loyalty to him. Because King Saul is a tyrant. I've repeatedly said that because it's true. And many of the Israelis want him gone. They don't want him to be king. And the man they would much rather have on the throne is David. So just a little bit more evidence as to how things are bubbling up almost as a split within Israel itself. Okay, back to 1 Samuel 29, verse 6. Then Achish called David and said to him, as he who is lives. Now, isn't that ironic? We have here a pagan, a worshiper of multiple gods, using the name of the God of Israel, the true and genuine God, to assure David that he does trust him, even though he's going to have to send him away. So, as he who is lives, you've been honest, and to me it seems right that you should march out and in with me in the campaign, for I found nothing wrong in you from the day of your coming to me to this day. Nevertheless, the lords do not approve of you, so go back now and go peaceably, that you may not displease the lords of the Philistines. Another little bit of irony here is that Achish says, I know that you are an honest man and you've been doing me good, when that's not really been the case, has it? David has been living at Ziklag and attacking those who threaten southern Israel, that is Judah, by going out and annihilating the people who are threats to Israel. But when Achish asks him where he's been, he says, oh, I've been attacking Israelis. I've been wiping out Israeli towns. So David has not been honest with Achish, and he has not been working against Israel like Achish thinks he's been working against Israel. Which brings us then to the next strange thing that happens. You know how I shared with you, I think David found himself in a bit of a quandary when this event happened, David was expected to go with Achish and fight. In fact, that's the way it's presented in 1 Samuel 28. I didn't quite get to that. Let me read it now. Achish said to David there, understand that you and your men are to go with me in the army. And David said to Achish, very well, you shall know what your servant can do. And Achish said to David, very well, I will make you my bodyguard for life. So David basically went along with Achish at the time that he was told he was going with the Philistines against Israel. But there's no way in the world David's going to attack Israelis. I guarantee you that. He's been avoiding attacking Israelis. So he must have been thinking to himself, well, if I get up there in the middle of all this stuff, I'm going to have to attack Philistines. The very thing that the Philistines were expecting, David probably was planning on doing. And it seems to me that when we go back here to 1 Samuel 29 again, when David is told that he's not going to go with the Philistines against Israel, that he seems disappointed now. Because it appears that he really was starting to make the plans to attack the Philistines covertly. So verse 8, David said to Achish, what have I done? What have you found in your servant from this day that I entered your service until now, that I may not go and fight against the enemies of my lord the king? And Achish answered and David and said, I know that you are blameless in my sight as an angel of God. Nevertheless, the commanders of the Philistines have said, he shall not go with us to battle. Now then, rise early in the morning with the servants of your Lord who came with you, and start early in the morning and depart as soon as you have light. So David is like not really wanting to be dismissed. That's what it seems to be in chapter 29. But Achish says, no, you're not going with us because the rest of the Philistines don't trust you. I trust you. I know you'll fight against the Israelis because you've been killing Israelis. But of course, that's not been the case. So David has got to be wondering in his head, what's the Lord got in mind here? I thought at first maybe I was going to go and attack Philistines, but now I have to go away and not have that opportunity. Now I'm going to break in with my own theory here. I believe that God wanted David and his men as far away from King Saul's death as possibly could be arranged. Because that way, David can't be accused of the death of Saul benefiting him. So David is going to come off as completely innocent of the end of Saul's reign. And I think that that helps him out in working on the unity of the Israeli nation after the death of Saul. And he'll have trouble with that. It'll take him a couple of years, several years, in order to get over just the bumps that are left. But the idea that he would be there on the day of Saul's death is not going to be one of those barriers. So verse number 11 says that David set out with his men early in the morning to return to the land of the Philistines, while the Philistines went up to Jezreel. The timing here, I think, is that David was at Aphek 5 days before the battle of Mount Gilboa. That's the day on which Saul is killed. And on that fifth day before the battle, he is told, you don't get to go any farther north. Turn around, go back to Ziklag. So next morning, as the sun is coming up, he and his men head south from Aphek to Ziklag. And that's about 40-some miles, I think, by road. So it's going to take him about a day and a half to get there. So he'll get to Ziklag about 2 days before the battle takes place. Let's read about that in 1 Samuel chapter number 30. Verse number 1. Now, when David and his men came to Ziklag on the third day. Now, the third day is there counted from the day on which he was told to leave. So 3 days later, 2 days before the battle, he arrives at Ziklag. The Amalekites had made a raid against the Negeb and against Ziklag. Now the Negeb, that's the southern Judean desert area, which Ziklag is part of. The very extreme northern part of the Sinai Desert. So the Amalekites are part of the group that David has been attacking over the last year and almost a half. And he's been annihilating them because they are the enemies of God's people and therefore also of God. So they come in and they know that Ziklag has Israelis in it. So they raid it. And what do they take? Stuff and people. So they had when they overcame Ziklag and burned it with fire, they took captive the women and all who were in it, both small and great. They killed no one, but carried them off and went their way. So they were thinking that they got themselves some slaves as well. When David and his men came to the city, they found it burned with fire and their wives and sons and daughters taken captive. So David and his guys arrived back to a smoldering city and missing relatives. Verse 4, then David and the people who were with him raised their voices and wept until there was no more strength to weep. And David's two wives also had been taken captive, Ahinoam of Jezreel and Abigail, the widow of Nabal of Carmel. Now that's, remember, the two wives that he's married in the last few months. They're from southeastern Judea. That's not Jezreel up in the north. That's Jezreel down in the southeast. David was greatly distressed, for the people spoke of stoning him because all the people were bitter in soul, each for his sons and his daughters. But David strengthened himself in he who is his God. So David's own men blamed him for the fact that they weren't there to protect their family members. They wanted to stone David. But David draws strength from God. And one of the ways he draws strength from God is by reaching out through the high priest that he has with him. David said to Abiathar, the priest, the son of Ahimelech, bring me the ephod. Now this is the part of the uniform of the high priest. It has the chest piece with the little pocket behind the chest piece where the Urim and the Thummim are located. And the Urim and the Thummim are the two stones that are used to ask yes or no questions of God. And I believe that the stones glowed according to the appropriate answer. So Abiathar brought the ephod to David, and David inquired of he who is, shall I pursue after this band? See, that's a yes or no question. Shall I chase down these Amalekites? Shall I overtake them? Another yes or no question. So he, meaning God, answered him, pursue, for you shall overtake them and shall surely rescue. So he got yes answers to the questions. Yes, you should go after them. Yes, you will catch up with them. And yes, you will beat them and rescue your people. So David set out and the 600 men who were with him, and they came to the brook Besor, where those who were left behind stayed. And David pursued. He and 400 men, 200 stayed behind, who were too exhausted to cross the brook Besor. So the brook Besor is a wadi that drains out of the region near Beersheba down into the Mediterranean. It is a boundary line. And David's men have been traveling for days now because they were headed north, and then they came back south, and then they went chasing after the Amalekites. And so 200 of these guys just can't keep going. So David says, you guys stay here, keep track of the stuff that we were carrying, and we'll go after them and come back to you. Now, verse number 11. They found an Egyptian in the open country, and they brought him to David. And they gave him bread, and he ate, and they gave him water to drink, and they gave him a piece of cake of figs and two clusters of raisins. And when he'd eaten, his spirit revived, for he'd not eaten bread or drunk water for 3 days and three nights. And David said to him, to whom do you belong? Where are you from? He said, I'm a young man of Egypt, servant to Amalekite, and my master left me behind because I fell sick 3 days ago. We had made a raid against the Negeb of the Kirathites, and against that which belongs to Judah, and against the Negeb of Caleb, and we burned Ziklag with fire. So David now has a clue as to where that raiding party is located.